Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Stephanie Sacks knows she has her work cut out. For the past 25 years, the goal and mission of this culinary nutritionist, author, teacher, and professional chef is to help all of us develop healthy eating habits through personalized nutrition therapy and culinary guidance. She does this in several ways. Stephanie's the host of Stirring the Pot Radio on Hampton's NPR. The show, which is also a podcast, focuses on food, cooking, nutrition, and health. She's also the author of What the Fork Are You Eating? An Action Plan for Your Pantry and Plate. It features 50 recipes and a blueprint on how to shop healthy. What the Fork is also the title of her blog. Stephanie is a regular contributor to the Dr. Oz Show, writes for the Huffington Post and Prevention Magazine. And earlier this year, she presented a TEDx talk in Manhattan, How Small Changes in Food Choice Can Make Big Everyday Differences. Stephanie received a Master's of Science in Nutrition from Columbia University and is also a graduate of the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. Stephanie, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Sandy.
So my guess is that you'll never not have a job, that you're going to just be working, because this problem, even though so many people are coming at it from different perspectives, is just the highest mountain in the world to climb, right?
That's a great way to open this, because sometimes especially lately, I get to this place where I'm like, I just wish that I didn't care so much. And I wish that I could just go be, you know, a clerk at a grocery store and get a paycheck and get health insurance and just
but
do something.
But it might freak you out as you're scanning people's items, what they're buying. You know, that's a bad choice.
Well,
also.
Right. Exactly. It does freak me out. And I do, in the end, believe that I'm here on this earth to do this. I can't shake this passion. It started when I was very young. And
why?
I was sick a lot as a kid. I had terrible allergies. I had asthma. I had recurring bronchitis, pneumonia. And this was in the 70s, and doctors kept drugging me. So I was on different inhalers. I was on bronchial dilators. I was even on steroids. And I kept getting sicker. My saving grace was I loved to cook.
Wait, how old are you when I'm talking about this?
I started cooking when I was 3. I was very passionate about cooking, and I had this wooden play kitchen in my playroom. And so,
but that's not real food, Stephanie.
No, but I would make real food. My Nana would come over and sit down at a table, and I would make her a tuna fish sandwich on white bread with a pickle. So it all started out with that in the Betty Crocker oven, and this was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And then my mom was always a gardener and a very creative cook, and so I would go into the kitchen with her and always felt inspiration in the kitchen. But then when I was a teenager, I started, or even younger than teens, I started cooking a lot. And because my mom did have a garden, and I would just experiment. And then when I was 15, I got a job, my summer job, in a health food store, cooking in a health food store. And so for 5 summers, I would come and I would cook in this health food store.
What'd you cook?
I would cook, I mean, I was working, this was in the 80s, and I was cooking everything. I was making hummus. I was making fresh caught tuna salad. I was making miso soup. I was seaweed salads, lentil salads. I mean, I was really experimenting with foods that I hadn't necessarily been exposed to.
But you were being tutored by somebody or mentored by somebody.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was being mentored by the people who owned the health food store, and I was also being mentored by this amazing woman in the kitchen who was like the consummate Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And she kicked my butt, and it was awesome. But on my free time, so if it was quiet, I would go to the bookshelves and I would start to read. And I picked up Food and Healing by Anne Marie Colbin. And Anne Marie Colbin, the late Anne Marie Colbin, founded the Natural Gourmet Institute for Health and Culinary Arts. And she's a real pioneer in the food as health movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so between her and Dr. Andy Weil, who was at that time talking about, you know, spontaneous healing and the connection between food and health, I started voraciously reading. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Maybe if I changed my diet, I could start to feel better.
So they're talking to me.
Right. They're talking to me. I didn't feel like, you know, I felt like there was hope because I just was hopeless.
Huh.
And just on so many drugs. And so I started playing with my diet as a teenager. And, you know, for 3 months, I would be macrobiotic. For the next 3 months, I would be vegan. I would go dairy free. I started voraciously reading labels. I became the resident food freak. You know, the typical question, you know, because I was going into college, let's say, and I'd come home and my mother would say, what diet are you on now?
Right.
You know, and I was the laughing stock of my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't care. And I was also the laughing stock of my peers. You know, they were drinking, as I always joke, they were drinking Coke out of Twizzler straws. You know, they would cut.
Yeah.
And I was asking where my
licorice.
Chicken came from.
Yeah.
Right. So it was by my sophomore year in college that I took myself off the meal plan in college. And I lived in a suite and I started cooking for myself. And when I was at college and I was cooking for myself and I was making my own choices, I started feeling better. And then I would go home and it would be a little different. You know, we had a cat. My allergies would act up
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't feel very well. And I'm like, I've got to find somebody who can help me here.
Because you thought you were onto something.
I thought I was onto something. And it was before the internet. I found this doctor. Her name was Dr. Sherry Rogers. And she wrote a book called Tired or Toxic.
Hmm.
And it was like a typewritten book. It was brilliant. And I read it. I'm like, I've got to see this doctor.
Now, was she local?
She was in Syracuse, New York. And I coincidentally went to college up 45 minutes from Syracuse at Hamilton College.
Oh, sure. Sure. Oh, upstate New York. And is that where you're from?
No, I'm originally from Westchester, actually.
Okay, but that's still New York. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I went to my parents and I said, I want to see this doctor. And they said it was okay. And it changed my life. She put me on a candida diet.
That means?
So a candida diet, you know, when you are on tons of antibiotics, it kills off, like now this day and age, we know about gut health, right? And our gut is considered our second brain. And so when we go on tons of medications, including antibiotics, what they do is they kill off the healthy bacteria in our gut, which leads way and opens the doors to all types of other potential illnesses. And you can have an overgrowth of bad bacteria. And so candida is a yeast that forms.
Ah.
And so it can make you very sick. So she put me on an anti-candida diet, which is a yeast-free, sugar-free, ferment-free, dairy-free diet. It's a very restrictive diet.
So what the hell did you eat? Grass?
I ate animal foods. I ate limited grains. I ate some beans. I ate nuts and seeds, tons of vegetables. The only fruit that I ate was lemon or lime. And I had, again, I was still working in the health food store. So she did that on top of supplementation and also on top more Western medicine allergy shots. And I went home for the summer between my junior and senior year in college. And when I was told to go on a candida diet, because I had had the background that I had in working in the health food store and in doing as much reading, I knew what to do. So I went on this diet, and within 1 month, I was off every medication.
Now, wait a minute. You said candida diet. Is it a candida-free diet, or
It's called the candida diet, but it's really an anti-candida diet. So it's a diet that really prohibits the bad yeast from growing.
Okay.
Okay. So the yeast feeds off of sugary foods, very starchy foods. So within a month on this very restrictive diet, I was off of every medication. I had never felt healthier. And I was like, wow, there is something to this. Our health is a mapping of what we eat. And so, you know, I sat with this and really, you know, I was a teenager and I was still in college and I took this information and I just learned how to navigate food differently and understood that, yes, when I would have to go on some other medication, you know, like maybe I would have to be on one or two medications versus five because living on a candida diet long-term is not realistic. But it set me on this journey to really understand how foods made me feel and then to investigate ingredients. And I mean, I'm at the point now, Sandy, where I can literally tell you when a company changes their ingredients in a food product. That's like, I'm like Rain Man like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I started talking about it, but I was a bit of a freak. And so I was very, you know, I just continued holding on to it for myself and then decided to formalize my education after I graduated from college and I had gotten into PR and marketing. And I wanted to do what I love and love what I do.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Stephanie Sachs, who happens to be a culinary nutritionist, an author, a teacher, and a professional chef. So now you change your academic trajectory and you say, there's a future in this, not only personally, but professionally. You start to say, what? I think I'll become a chef, become a nutritionist?
Well, that's a great question because actually I decided that I was going to go to school for nutrition. Mm-hmm. And I went to NYU for a meeting and to learn about the school. And I was like, I don't think I want to start here. I need to go study with Anne-Marie Colbin, who wrote Food and Healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did, is I went to culinary school first. And then I thought, oh, you know what? I'm just going to get into food service and I'm going to touch people with my food. And then I had this aha moment where a teacher of mine at culinary school came in one day and she said, Stephanie, I'm supposed to give a lecture to a bunch of women at St. Luke's Roosevelt
Hospital.
Who have cancer.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. My babysitter just canceled. I need you to take the lecture. I was like, Roberta, no.
Give the lecture?
Yeah.
I thought she was going to say, I need you to babysit.
No. She's like, I need you to give the lecture. And I said, there's no way I'm giving this lecture. She goes, oh, no, you are giving this lecture. I'm like, I can't give this lecture. I'm just a student. She goes, yes, you can. And you are. And it was like that situation where I couldn't refuse. And I go up to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital and I'm standing in front of
this is in Manhattan.
40 mm-hmm. women. And this was in 1998, 1999. Mm-hmm. With cancer. And it was like this out-of-body experience as I'm like looking down on myself, talking to these women about the benefits of a whole foods diet and the impact of food choice on health outcome, health paradigm. And
obviously you personalized the lecture because you've been there and done that.
Yeah, and I did slightly personalize it, but also I realized that I had to honor where all of these women were at. But I did have that personal journey to call on. And I'm literally having this out-of-body experience. I'm looking down on myself. I'm like, they're all looking at me like I'm wearing Birkenstocks and I've got dreadlocks. And I'm like, this is what I need to be doing. Like, I need to be bridging this gap. I need to be teaching people how to prevent and manage illness through food choice. And I've had the personal experience to do it, but I need a real degree in nutrition. You know, I was 31. I had a minor nervous breakdown because I'm like, oh my God, I have to go back to school again. And I opted into one of those, 6-month nutrition programs.
Mm-hmm.
I dropped out after 2 days and I'm like, this is ridiculous. I need to go to real school.
So what made you apply to Columbia?
That actually was the only school I wanted to go to because their program was not only clinical, it was very community-based, it was environmentally based, and there was a huge global aspect to it. I knew I'd never get the boards to get in.
Ha! Huh.
This is one of my most favorite stories, actually. And I tell this to a lot of young women and men who come to me and say, I want to do what you do. And I'm always like, never take no for an answer. So I put together, I had a PR background. I put together a press packet and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And that was form relationships as a chef and a nutritionist with doctors and dietitians who were starting to talk about actual food.
You are what you eat.
And I wanted to bridge that gap. So they would talk about it, but they don't go into the homes. They don't translate. They don't do that culinary translation. And so I wrote this all up in a nice press package, and I met with the head of the nutrition department, and I said, Dr. Contento, I need to come to Columbia. I need to come to your nutrition education program, but I'm not going to get the boards to get in. She's like, you'll be fine. I'm like, no. I will get straight A's if I come here, but I'll never get the boards.
Oh, God, can I relate to that? Yes, I totally understand. Don't make me take the GREs.
So she took my package, and she said, oh, dear, don't worry. You know, I'm sure you'll do fine on your tests. And I'm like, yeah, okay, we'll see. And I bombed the tests, and I called her. I'm sobbing, and I'm like, And she said, stop. You've been accepted.
We don't
just look at boards.
Well, that's wonderful.
And it was honestly, I have chills talking about it. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most unbelievable experiences of my life being at that school.
Well, clearly, and it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. You were a woman on a mission, and
oh my
you knew
God.
That you had to do this, and you had to feed this passion, this drive. And so was it a 2-year program?
It was, but I did it in 3 years because I worked while I was in it. I was cooking for people with illness during, and I was doing a ton of volunteering while I was there. So I stretched it out over 3 years. And really started to integrate myself into the professional space. So I got very involved in, school food service, volunteering there, in food and ag, work. Mm-hmm. So I volunteered at various organizations. I did a lot of work in low-income communities, like Early Head Start. And I really, I filled my plate with a tremendous amount of varied experiences in the food space because I wanted to suck Columbia dry.
So you're a determined person who knows what she needs, where that's not necessarily so common. And whether you had a mentor or not, you were going to get on this road and you were going to drive that car on that road.
Oh, yeah. I remember my dad calling my dad at one point, and I had a meeting. I had gotten a meeting. Sloan Kettering had just opened their integrative center.
And for those who don't know, that's, I guess, the country's premier cancer hospital.
Right. And so I had met with their head of integrative there when they had just opened. And I told her what I wanted to do. And I had already gotten into Columbia and was taking my prerequisites to go there. And she said, wow, you know, we could really use you, but you just don't have any letters after your name. And there's just too much red tape here. And I remember calling my dad afterwards crying. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm giving up. I can't do this. And he said, you're 10 years ahead of your time. Don't give up. I spent a lot of time mentoring other people who want to get into this field because I never really had anybody.
With the exception of that chef.
Well, I had Anne-Marie Colbin. I mean, Andy Weil was obviously, his work was remarkable to me. Dr. Tarona Lowdog, and use them as mentors. I mean, now I'm blessed enough that I get to work alongside some of these people, which is crazy. Kathy Swift is another person. She created the entire nutrition program at Canyon Ranch and does a tremendous amount of work in the nutrition field and is actually behind so many of the more celebritized doctors that we see out there and the books that they write. So I would look at all of this work as it started to come out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, these people are remarkable. And then as my career grew, I had the opportunity to meet some of these people.
How did What the Fork Are You Eating come to be? You must think that as you're going to somebody's home for dinner or sitting in a restaurant. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know, the genesis of the book really is that when I work one-on-one with people, it's a very intimate experience. So I go into their homes, I do an evaluation, I take them.
And it's very particular.
Very particular. I'm in communication with their doctors or their registered dietitians or their other, the people who are part of their care team, let's say.
Is it always someone who's not well? Or could you be working with somebody who just said, you know, I don't think I'm going to, I don't want to eat this anymore. And they could be perfectly fine.
At first it was, you know, at first it was more people who are unwell. Now it's, I work a lot on prevention with people.
That's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at this stage, it's a real combination. But the genesis was that I would work with these people intimately, and they're like, oh my God, Stephanie, you know, we've been reading about this stuff for so long. We've been listening to people for so long. The way you talk about it is just so easy to understand. It's so interesting. It's funny. You make us feel good, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I had contributed to 3 books.
In the past.
Yes. So it was like over the years, starting in 2006, I had started contributing to different books. The first was the book by Dr. Woodson Merrill called The Source. And then I contributed to Chris Carr's Crazy Sexy Diet. And then I contributed to The Thriving Child by Erica Reed. And I just had reached this point where I was kind of done contributing. And clients kept pushing me. Students kept pushing me. And I had this experience that I love to talk about, and I actually mention it in my TED Talk. I was at hockey practice for my older son, and this was years ago. This was probably, in 2011. And I'm sitting in the stands, and there's a woman who is next to me, and her son is obviously on the ice. And I have my younger son with me, who's about a year and a half to 2 at that time, and her son, who's roughly the same age, and her son was hysterical crying and screaming. And I'm watching, and she pulls out an empty bottle, baby bottle, and she then pulls out a bottle of Gatorade, red Gatorade, and she pours it in to this bottle.
Ay, ay, ay.
And she gives it to her son, and it quiets him. And I was infuriated. I was like,
Did you say something?
Her? No, I didn't.
Okay.
And I was like, do I say something? Don't I say something? And I'm like, no, you don't say something. And then I got really sad, and I was like, okay, how am I going to resolve this? And I said, the only way I'm going to resolve this is if I write that book. I'm done. Like, I am done.
Because I can't take this anymore.
I can't take it anymore, and I can't take it having everybody else call on me for my expertise. I'm putting my expertise out there in a book now. Now, it's not easy writing a book this day and age. Everybody is self-publishing, and I didn't want to self-publish. I wanted to be published.
And you're not the first person to tackle this topic.
No, I'm not. You know, I met an agent, actually, through my lawyer.
And what year is this that you're—
This is in 2012 now. So I met an agent through my lawyer, and I joke with my agent today. She literally dragged me over the coals for 4 months. And she's like, I love your credentials. Your voice is definitely different. I love what you have to say, but I don't know how I can sell this yet. And I was in like an intensive, now I was a writing minor in college. I was like in a 4 month intensive writing workshop with a potential agent. Okay. And now you have to understand I have two kids. So like I'm like doing the mommy thing, I'm working, and then at night I'm like feverishly writing, sending her stuff, she's editing it. And then by September of 2012, as I say to her, we got engaged and married. And it took me 6 weeks to write a proposal. Beginning of 2013, she pre-sold it, and everyone was like, yes, we love the title, we can't wait to see this. And so she thought it was going to be an easy sell. I was rejected everywhere.
Because?
Love Stephanie, love her voice, love her credentials.
But no, he's going to buy this?
But she's not a celebrity, and we've heard all this information before. And my agent was like, no, you haven't. No, you haven't. 29 publishers rejected me and the book.
Now, if that were me, I would have gone somewhere and indulged in French pastry. You know what I mean? Because I would be feeling sorry for myself. And that would be the quickest way to feel better.
There were two publishers who were interested in me as an author, smaller houses, but they wanted a different book. And so I said to my agent, I was like, I just need a break right now. And she, you know, she tossed over some ideas. And so I decided that, okay, well, maybe the book that I need to write is What the Fork Are Your Kids Eating? If you don't care about your own health, care about your kids. Like, uh-huh. I was being snarky,
got it.
You know? And I was like, you know what? I need a break right now. And my agent doesn't call me. She actually, like, if she needs to talk, she texts me or emails me. Unless it's urgent. So I'll never forget, I was sitting
you
at
got
my
a phone call?
I was sitting at my dining room table and just working, and she calls and she goes, honey, I know you wanted a break, but I just got a call from Tarcher. So Tarcher was part of Penguin, and Penguin then merged with Random House. She said they're interested. And I said, well, you know, we're kind of in the middle of possibly doing a redirect, and they said that they wanted to see your redirect by next week. I was like, are you kidding me? I have to write a redirect right now? She goes, just 3 pages. I said, okay. So literally, I dropped everything that week, and I wrote a 3-page redirect of, you know, What the Fork Are Your Kids Eating?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And she was going to turn it around for me on a Monday and then get it to Tarcher Penguin on a Wednesday. And I have a radio show. And I was recording my radio show, and I turned my phone on afterwards, and she calls. I'm like, I don't feel like talking. She calls again. I'm like, oh, I better pick up. She's like, are you sitting down? I said, what's up? She goes, Tarcher just offered you a deal on your original book.
Wow.
And it
they
was—
They saw the light.
Yep. And I worked with an amazing editor. And the thing that was just so beautiful about it being Tarcher was that literally they're the publisher of one of my most favorite books in the food space called Hope's Edge by Frances Moore LePay and her daughter, Anna LePay. And so it was just such an honor to be published
well,
by them.
Well, the stars were aligned. If you're just joining us, I've been talking with Stephanie Sachs, who is a culinary nutritionist, a teacher, a professional chef, and the author of What the Fork Are You Eating? This book actually pertains to everybody. It's not one group centric.
Well, you know, the thing about this book is there's something in it for everybody. And
that sounds like a cop-out. What does that mean?
Well, I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
You know, and it's interesting. And I'll explain it with a bit of an anecdote, which was I waited quite a while for the publisher to send me the cover of the book. And when they sent me the cover, there's not much that pushes me over the edge. But I went into a tailspin because the cover of the book was very indicative of the book being of the Michael Pollan genre. Okay, so Michael Pollan is one of the most notorious food journalists, and his work is wonderful. But he speaks to a very specific audience. And this book was not meant as that. And so I told my agent, I said, I'm beside myself. This book is meant for the masses. I said, this is not a book meant for the Michael Pollan audience. And they can get something from it, but it goes far beyond that. And I want to reach everybody. As my friend says, you need to reach Martha in Iowa. Okay? And that's who I wanted to reach. This is written for Martha in Iowa. And as much as it's written for, you know, Miffy on Park Avenue. And
Bitsy.
Or Bitsy, right. However we want to call her, you know. So what ended up happening was I fought really hard with my publisher on the cover, and they agreed to change it. And then one of the first reviews that came out about the book was that, and this is honestly one of the greatest honors that I could have ever received, was that this book is a much more digestible Michael Pollan and Marion Nessel combined. And Marion Nessel is the head of nutrition and food studies at NYU, and she is one of my sheroes. And to be compared to her in any way is like one of the highest honors that
so
I could possibly
get. So you died and went
to
heaven.
I did. And you know, I contacted one of my professors at Columbia, and she said, honestly, nothing better could be said. So in the end, what this book does is it really gives the reader an understanding of how our food is regulated or not regulated, and then a look into the, as I call them, the top-rated terminators, the 10 things in your food or being done to your food that are just not cool. What they are, why they're bad, the better few alternatives. Because in the end, I'm about solutions. I don't want to just talk about the problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who wants to hear about the problems? We have mm-hmm. so many of them. And then I go into, okay, guys, how are we going to look at food differently? So what? How do you read a nutrition facts label? How do you understand health claims? How do you understand an ingredient list? And then what are all those really clever labels that we see on food? Pasture-raised, cage-free, free-range, humanely raised, antibiotic-free, hormone-free, natural. And I decode all
of
these
labels.
Oh, that's
great, because that stuff makes your head spin.
And then I take you into your pantry, and I walk you through cleaning it out. And then I take you into the grocery store, and I teach you how to make better choices. And then we get into the kitchen together. And then there are all these appendices of resources. So, you know, as a lot
of— So no pun intended here either. It's one-stop shopping,
it is.
Book.
It is. And, you know, as many people have emailed me, many readers who will buy it as an ebook, and they're like, oh, my God, we loved your book. We thought it would be useful as an ebook, but we realized it's encyclopedic.
Right.
And we need it as a guide to reference. And so that's what I'm starting to understand. And that's what I always imagined the book would be, as a reference. And you could, it's for the nutrition maven or the nutrition neophyte. And, or as my mom said to me when I gave her the first manuscript to read, she said, huh, so that's what's been going on in your head for all these years. God, I am so glad I'm not living in that brain.
Well, I guess it's easy for us to say that we're so glad that you live in your own brain, and I can't believe it. We're basically run out of time. I just, one last question. What's kind of in the works for you now?
You know, I'm working on a second book proposal right now. It's going to be along the same lines of the What the Fork Are You Eating brand. I'm hoping that my radio show is going to perhaps move to a much larger platform mm-hmm. so I can reach the masses, because in the end, that's what I want to do. And obviously, I'll continue to do media and contribute where it's valuable. I continue to teach all over. So whether I'm speaking to a consortium of schools in New Jersey, or I'm teaching up at Canyon Ranch, or I'm speaking to chefs, I do a lot of speaking and consulting.
Excellent. Well, we're so glad that you're writing and you're talking and you're investigating and you're researching. It's been nothing short of my pleasure to get to know you, Stephanie. Thanks so much for sharing your journey and your passion with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Sandy.
If you have any suggestions for a guest or any comments, go to our website, sandyklineshow.com. And join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Kline.